Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
He's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Both drivers were killed in a two-vehicle crash that occurred on McKay Road west of Aurora shortly after 1 p.m. Sunday. The Marion County Sheriff's Office identified the victims as Jessica Griego, 34, of Oregon City, and Martin Johnson, 65, of Willamina. Both were pronounced dead at the scene. Also involved was Griego's 4-year-old son, who was transported to a Portland area hospital and was reported Sunday to be in good condition. Deputies interviewed witnesses at the scene who stated Griego's silver Lexus was traveling westbound on McKay Road northeast near Case Road when it went into the oncoming lane of traffic, striking Johnson's black Ford Explorer head-on. The sheriff's office said it's unclear if speed or alcohol were factors in the crash. McKay Road was closed for several hours while deputies and other first responders worked the scene. The sheriff's office was assisted by the Marion County Medical Examiner's Office, Aurora Fire District, Woodburn Ambulance, and Marion County Public Works. The collision was the worst of several that occurred within a span of a few days in that area in a year that has already seen a high number of deadly crashes on McKay. 3 people died when a pickup truck collided head-on with a box van in late March, and another 3 died in a 3-vehicle crash there last June. A 4-car collision in December resulted in several injuries and 1 death. Mildred Schaber, an 81-year-old Newburgh woman, who was reportedly not wearing a seatbelt. With this weekend's crash, the death toll stands at 9 in just the past 12 months. It prompted a heartbreaking plea for help from St. Paul Fire Chief Brian Lee to State Rep Bill Post, who shared the message on his Facebook page. "It's getting really bad out here, and any help you can come up with would be greatly appreciated," Chief Lee said. Representative Post responded with a plea for residents to drive the rural roads more safely. "This is so tragic and so avoidable," he said. "People have got to slow down, drive them like they are. Back country farm roads, not freeways. Put away the cell phones and pay attention. 2 more dead. Man, I'm so frustrated."
As the cost of participating in youth sports continues to rise, Canby Kids Incorporated has rolled out a new program, Pass It On Canby, which is intended to give all kids a chance to play, regardless of socioeconomic status. Here's how it works. Take your unneeded, gently used, and clean youth sports gear to any one of a half a dozen in collection bins located around town. The equipment will be collected and distributed to deserving youth athletes in the community. Collection bin locations can be found at Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate in Canby, Cutsforth's Market, Miller's Point S Tire and Auto, Oliver Insurance, Ultimate Team Spirit, and CrossFit Wilsonville. Additional barrels are available for special events, temporary places at places of business, sports tryouts, or meetings, etc. Cutsforth's is delighted to be a collection site for Pass It On Canby, says Kelsey Cordell with Cutsforth's Market. "We greatly value our community and enjoy supporting local kids' athletics. As a collection site, we hope to provide a convenient location for customers to donate their used sports gear and help other families in the Canby community. We are excited to help support an organization that encourages our community to love one another in a tangible way." The donation items will be collected and housed at a storage shed provided by North Pine Storage. On the first Wednesday of each month from 6 to 8 p.m. beginning August 7th, Pass It On Canby will open the doors to the storage unit and invite families in need to come shop for their children's athletic gear. Collection bins, and by the way, shop was in quotations. Collection bins were purchased by the Canby Kids Sports Boards, while graphic design and printing was donated by Canby resident Mike Dunleavy's team at Packaging Corporation of America. With a generous donation from the Wayne Oliver Foundation, the program will be able to cover startup expenses, including creating signage and flyers to send home information to families in need. Jeff Scott, a board member of the Wayne Oliver Foundation, said this new endeavor is very in keeping with his organization's namesake, a beloved community member who passed away in 2014. Wayne dedicated his life to supporting the people of Cambie, especially through the youth athletics, Scott said. Getting more kids who may not be able to afford the expensive cost of athletic gear out playing sports is a cause the Wayne Oliver Foundation is very pleased to support. Founded in 1975, Cambie Kids Incorporated is a nonprofit 501(c) umbrella organization of the Cambie Youth Sports, providing youth recreational and competitive team sports opportunities for children in and around the Cambie area on a year-round basis. The Cambie Kids Board is an all-volunteer board that consists of four members at large and representatives from each sport. Over 500 volunteer parents, coaches, and supporters work in partnership with the Cambie School District, the business community, and local government to provide competition in five sports, including Cambie Junior Baseball, Cambie Wildcats Softball, Cambie United Soccer Association, Cambie Cougar Football, and Cambie Youth Lacrosse.
Speaking of passing, House Bill 2020 was approved by the Oregon House of Representatives this week. The so-called cap and trade bill, which is aimed at lowering carbon emissions, passed the House Monday on a mostly party-line vote with two Democrats, Representatives Katie McCowan of Coos Bay and Brad Witt of Clatskanie, joining all 22 Republican members in dissent. Cambie's Representative Christine Drazen joined her GOP colleagues in voting no. The freshman lawmaker has been particularly vocal in her opposition to the bill, not only because of her belief that it will harm Oregon businesses, industry, and consumers, but also that it simply won't work the way its drafters intended. The measure is now in the Senate, where it also faces stiff resistance from Republicans. Though the GOP holds a distinct minority in this chamber as well, they have one tool still available to them, the walkout. By simply boycotting, they can deny the Senate a quorum, effectively preventing votes from being taken on any measure. It's the nuclear option, and it's one they employed successfully earlier in the session to stall the Student Success Act. The act ultimately passed, but it came with several concessions from the Democratic majority. Now they're threatening to do it again, and Governor Kate Brown is not having it. In a statement Wednesday, she said the Oregon State Police has been put on standby to ensure the Senate's members all do the job they were elected to do. People place their lives on the line to protect our democracy, and it's a slap in the face of those sacrifices for the Senate Republicans to turn their back on respectful dialogue just because they don't agree with others in the conversation, she said. I am prepared to use all resources and tools available to me as governor to ensure that Oregonians are being served by their leaders. Senate Republican leader Herman Bartshager Jr. said the members of his caucus have been threatened with fines and arrests and that they are simply trying to protect rural Oregonians. All we want is for the people of Oregon to vote on this horrible bill, he said. Walking out is part of the conversation because the governor is not willing to move on her position on the bill, and she's only representing Portland and the environmental community, not rural Oregonians. Oregon is a dictatorship, not by one person, but by one party. Truck drivers and timber workers, including several from the local area, demonstrated outside the state capitol Wednesday in protest of HB 2020.
Police beat for the week of May 21st through the 27th. On May 21st at 12:30 a.m., a juvenile was taken into custody for curfew violation after repeatedly returning to a residence from which she had already been asked to leave. On May 22nd at 4:33 p.m., police on an unrelated call overheard yelling at a nearby home. They spoke to the residents and determined that no crime had occurred, but did encourage them to, quote, calm down and let the situation not escalate. Which is always good advice. We should always take that. On May 24th at 10:30 p.m., an intoxicated man was seen yelling on the street, then smashing a glass bottle and attempting to attack somebody with it. The man managed to elude officers for a short while, but they soon located him at where else but a bar on Southwest 2nd Avenue. He was taken into custody. On May 25th at 9:15 p.m., officers responded to a report of a man returning to his store from which he had already been asked to leave and stealing merchandise. Officers located the suspect in a vehicle on South Malala Forest Road and initiated a traffic stop. The man gave false name and date of birth. He was arrested for theft, identity theft, criminal trespass, and an outstanding Deschutes County warrant. The stolen merchandise was recovered. On May 27th at 1:55 a.m., a witness called to report a possible DUI after seeing a young person stumble into a vehicle on a driveway. Officers located a vehicle matching the description, and the underage driver was arrested for driving under the influence. Later that day at 7:15 p.m., officers responded to a single vehicle crash on South Highway 170. The car had caught fire, with an injured passenger trapped inside. Officers extinguished the fire and arranged medical transport for both the passenger and the driver, and the driver was later arrested for DUI and reckless driving. Finally, and this is a fun one, at 11:46 that night, officers responded to a possible burglary at a tire shop on Southwest 1st Avenue, which was closed at the time. Obviously, it was midnight. Officers located a woman walking through the parking lot with a flashlight. She admitted to the officers that she was taking tires, but claimed to have permission to do so. She did, however, agree to put the tires back.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week, and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hill's NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined. Little white dog with the meek brown eyes, tell me the boon that most you prize. Would a juicy bone meet your heart's desire, or a cozy rug by a blazing fire, or a sudden race with a truant cat, or a gentle word or a friendly pat? Is a worn-out ball you have always near the dearest of all the things held dear? Or is it the home you left behind, the dream of bliss to your doggish mind? But the little white dog just shook his head, as if none of these are best, he said. A boy's clear whistle came from the street. There's a wag of the tail and a twinkle of feet. And the little white dog did not even say, excuse me, ma'am, as he scampered away. But I'm sure as can be his greatest joy is just to trot behind that boy. Welcome back, listeners. Summer is officially here, which means it's that time of year that the Clackamas County Fairgrounds gets taken over virtually every weekend by some fun or interesting event. It could be gardeners or rock hunters. Heck, last weekend we got invaded by pirates. This weekend it'll be dogs and dog lovers as the Clackamas Kennel Club puts on their annual dog show and performance trials. They've been holding this event at the fairgrounds for over 30 years now and have seen it grow into one of the largest all-breed dog shows in the country and have gained a reputation for putting on a consistently fun, high quality, and reasonably priced show. Steve Nielsen, Vice President of the club's Board of Directors, joins us now to talk about the upcoming show. Steve, welcome onto the Can Be Now podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How are you today?
I'm very good. Weather's great.
Good. That's good to hear. So I have to confess to you that I've never been to a dog show before, yours or any other, and I don't know much about what happens there. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like?
Sure, I sure can. And this is a good one to attend as your first dog show because it's an outside show primarily. So it's a very kind of laid-back, casual, fun atmosphere.
Okay.
Our dog show is over 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday is a day that's dedicated to specialties. A specialty is a smaller dog show that is devoted to just one breed. And there's 14 of those that will take place on Friday. Saturday and Sunday are the two main days. Those are the two best days for spectators who want to come and see everything going on at once. So on Saturday and Sunday, there's three main components of a dog show. The first one is confirmation, which is what you've probably seen on TV, where dogs are judged by breed. And the breed winners advance to group competition, and the group competition winners advance to best in show. And one of the seven group dogs will be selected as best in show.
And what criteria are they judged on, Steve?
Okay, every breed has a written standard, okay, that is the standards are approved by the parent. Each breed has a parent club.
Okay.
And the parent club writes what they call a standard of perfection, which describes the ideal dog in every breed. The judge is supposed to compare each dog, each exhibit, to that standard, and then within each breed, select the one dog that is the best representation of the standard. Now, dog judging is not... It's highly subjective. So on Saturday, you've got a dog show. On Sunday, you have a dog show. But you have different judges judging each day.
Mm-hmm.
So the outcome is likely to be different each day because each judge will have a little different opinion of how that standard is describing a dog. So, you know, it's not something that's... well, it's highly subjective. One judge may think dog A is good, and the next judge will think dog B is good. So,
right, it's, right. Not necessarily like a head-to-head competition where it's, you know, whoever gets the most points or whoever does X and the fastest wins.
Right. Yep. That's basically it. Now, there is a component, of course, in all breeds of showmanship, and some dogs just show better than others, and they'll get a few bonus points for that also.
Okay,
so,
if they're like really, really big divas or something like that, or
yep,
just
yep,
love,
one way to say
love
it.
To pander to the crowd.
Yep.
Then, cool. What are the biggest divas of the dog world? Poodles.
Well, you know, they're divided into groups. So each group has its own breeds that tend to do fairly well. And and so you've got to look at it by group. But Dobermans traditionally do pretty well. And, you know, poodles are always do well in the non-sporting group. But it varies a little bit. And, you have, Saturday there will be 158 different breeds entered.
Wow.
So you
That's
have, and there will be 158 breeds entered plus the total entries on Saturday, not counting Fast Cat and Barn Hunt, were 1,647. So you've got a lot of dogs to pick from.
That's 1,600 dogs you're going to have at this show?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Good grief, Steve.
There'll be close to 2,000 when you add in Fast Cat and the Barn Hunt competition.
Oh,
each one
gosh.
Of those will have about probably 150 entries.
That sounds a little nuts, man.
Well, it's not as bad as it sounds, because you got to remember,
though,
the fairgrounds, we use most of it, and it's spread out over 50 acres, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a very casual atmosphere, very...
Oh, that's cool.
Very, kind of like going to a big picnic. Basically,
okay.
Is what it's
okay.
Like. So
these dogs aren't all super high maintenance, you know, needing their own dressing room and all that stuff.
No, because remember, the confirmation is only one part of a dog show. You also have companion events, and you also have performance events. The companion events would be canine good citizenship, trick dog, rally, and obedience. And those all take place in Ely Arena. Okay, and those are traditionally the type of events that you train your dog to do, various tasks, jumps, and et cetera, and so on. They start out with your really easy things, where families will start with, like, a new puppy or dog, would be the canine good citizenship test and the trick dog. Then you can advance to rally, which is a little bit more structured, but everything is done on leash. So it's a good way for somebody to start with a new dog. Then it advances up to the traditional obedience, which is more advanced. And each one of those has several levels. So it's a good place for a family to start. If you've got kids and you want to get them started in something that's done with your family dog, it's a good place to start, because it's competitive, and it's not kind of a threatening thing. You do it at your own speed, and it's can be fun for the whole family to be involved. It's something other than your kids just perhaps playing all day with their iPhone or whatever.
The third thing,
the two performance events we offer, which are Barn Hunt, which is is done in Roseburg Arena. And it's a course that is constructed out of straw bales, and the dog and you have three tubes, plexiglass tubes. One tube is empty. Second tube has rat bedding in it. The third tube has an actual rat. The rats are domesticated, and they're pets, so it's nothing abusive to the rat. And these tubes are hidden in the straw.
Okay.
And then the handler takes the dog into the ring, and you turn your dog loose, and your dog has to search through the straw bales and find the one tube that has the actual rat. And then there's two other elements to it. They have to crawl through a tunnel, and they have to crawl over the hay bales. So to get a qualifying score, they have to find the tube that has the real rat, not the two decoys, plus they have to tunnel and they have to crawl over the bales. So again, that's something that's fun to watch, because you find a big variety of dogs doing that, because the companion and performance events are also open to mixed breed dogs. You don't have to have a purebred dog to do a lot of these fun events. And then we also offer Fast Cat, which is done in the yellow parking lot behind the rodeo grounds. That's a 100-yard dash for dogs that's timed and scored.
Oh, okay. That's not them chasing a cat or pulling a cat of a
No,
bale.
You chase a plastic bag.
Oh, okay.
So fast means, if the Fast Cat is the fast coursing ability test.
Oh.
And it's just to measure a dog's ability to course, or actually what they would have been doing in the old days is chasing rabbits. And things like that.
Yeah.
But now we let them chase plastic bags.
Well, I don't know. Dogs do like to chase cats, so maybe next year, Steve, think about trying that with a cat. See if maybe you can get them to go even faster that way.
Well, we might, but I don't.
You guys never.
Think
you guys
we'll
probably
be
know
trying
what you're doing.
That. It's. I tell you, when you watch these dogs chase the bag,
yeah.
it's you. You know, you'd be amazed.
Pretty impressive.
How many even. even the smaller breeds of dogs, like Boston Terriers and such, some of them are great at doing these performance events, even though you don't think of some of these dogs as, you know, other than lap dogs, but they're very athletic.
Yeah. Well, I this is all really interesting to me. Like, it's so fascinating, these different events and different groups and different communities that are all built around stuff that, you know, that I've never heard of or wouldn't even necessarily think of, like some of these cool events that you're describing. But another really cool thing about your organization is that you've been around for quite a while, longer than people might expect. That this particular event has been going on since 1988, which is actually the year that I was born, so 31 years strong, but the organization was founded even earlier than that, 1974, so you guys have been going for quite some time, and I was just curious, Steve, what you kind of credit that success to, or what do you think has allowed your organization to grow and to stay strong? What's kind of kept people coming back for all these years?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain that would make sense to a layperson, but I think it gets down to the atmosphere of the show itself. People, I think, there's drawbacks to having an outside show, and most of it is outside, of course, because the weather can be, you know, it can be perfect, or it can be rainy, or it can be too hot. But regardless of that, the atmosphere is much like a picnic, where you'll see people, they sit under the trees in some groups, and, you know, they're having maybe some meetings and different things going on. And if you have been to an indoor dog show, it's very crowded, there's no room to do anything, and people generally show and leave. So the outdoor show like we have is not quite as common, but the atmosphere is much more relaxed and fun for the exhibitors. So a lot of them just enjoy that that experience. Also, our club was founded by people who showed their own dogs. And because of that, our show has always been focused toward the owner-handler. Rather, you know, dog shows are really one of the few places where amateurs and professionals compete together in the same time. And we've always tried to gear our show to attract the amateur or the breeder owner handlers rather than necessarily the professional handlers, because they sometimes have different criteria what shows they want to go to. So we always knew that if we were going to be successful, we had to attract the backbone of the sport, which is the owner handlers, and that's kind of what we've done for the last 30 some years, and I think the results kind of speak for itself. The show's become quite popular, and has been well supported by people. There'll be people here from every state in the West. More than half of our people will come from outside the state of Oregon, so it does have a good impact on the tourism and especially the hospitality type businesses within Canby and the kind of the local area. It's really a nice event. Now, the event itself, there's no admission charge. It's free.
Oh, cool.
So it is $5 to park. Now, of course, if you live close enough to walk, you can just walk in either the blue or red gate. And I suggest if you want to stay and watch a few things, you bring a lawn chair. But there is no admission charge, so you can come in and you can look at whatever things you want to watch, and there's food available, or you can bring your own food. It's kind of up to you. But I think that's the kind of atmosphere that makes it fun for the exhibitors and, you know, anybody who wants to show up as a spectator.
we have coming up here on the other side of this break, we actually are going to be able to talk to somebody who's participating in the show this year, and we're going to meet one of their dogs as well. So we're really excited about that. But wanted to just give you one last question, Steve. It's the most important one. We do occasionally on this show delve into, you know, more controversial topics, and this is probably a really controversial question I'm about to ask you. But what dog do you think is best?
Oh, I can tell you that. That's no problem. Dalmatians are the best dog.
Oh, shots fired.
Yes, I can, and I can prove it. I have two sitting right here staring at me waiting for a treat.
Oh, well, there you go. They wouldn't lie.
Nope. I mean,
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Steve, and I hope that your 31st show this weekend is your best one yet.
Well, I hope so, too, and I'd encourage people to come on out and take a look. Free event, so it's a good way to maybe get the family to come out. It's not going to cost you an arm and a leg, and you may learn something.
Yeah. Right. Clackamas Kennel Club on Facebook, if you want to look at some photos or get some more information about what's going on, or otherwise just come on down to the Clackamas County Fairgrounds this Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships. Whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology, Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who would deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Welcome back, listeners. I found a dog person. I'm here with Bethany Davis of Not a Bear Newfoundlands, based outside of Canby, and her Newfoundland, the kid.
Mm-hmm. This is the kid.
Yes, just the kid. And he's maybe the largest dog I've ever seen, and you say he's not full grown.
No, not even. He's a year and a half old. So
are you just
he's not
a
even
big,
two.
Like, Western fan? Where does the name come from?
The kid?
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of based on Billy the Kid. But
yeah, right, exactly.
Know, Billy didn't really fit him.
Uh-huh.
And he was the only boy in the litter, and
yeah.
I just kind of fit. I don't know, where's the kid? You know,
right.
He was the youngest at
the
time.
Mm-hmm.
So, he just kind of became the kid, and it just stuff.
Never just kid though. Wait, that would be like Kid Rock.
It's kind of funny because like when we talk about him,
yeah.
he's the kid.
Yeah.
But when we talk to him, he's kid.
Yeah.
So like if I were to ask him, like kid, come.
Yeah.
You know he's talking to, but I wouldn't say the kid. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
super
odd.
Friendly. When I just met him, we're here at Wade Park, by the way. If you guys hear some of the wind and or maybe kids screaming over in the playground, but I sat down at this picnic table and he literally like climbed on top to say hi. Give me some of the specs about this dog. Like I said, he's huge. Like, how much does he weigh?
He is about, let's say, he's about 130 right now. And he's a male, so males are going to be larger,
that's
of course.
Like how much I weighed in high school.
And boys are around 160.
When they're full grown.
So that's, yeah. So
yeah.
I would say that, you know, he'll probably hit that. He's a little bit bigger, so mm-hmm. he may even go over that, maybe like 170. It's really hard to know, of course, until they're full grown, but
right, because he's just a kid.
Yeah, just a kid, just a little kid.
Just a kid. So is he gonna show this weekend?
Yes, he's going to show. He has already points, so basically when you go to a show, you're competing for points, and those points add up, and then you earn your championship. So he has, he's got 5 points right now, and you need 15 for a championship. So he has a few. Cool.
So does it build up over a season, like sort of like rodeo?
No, they don't roll over. Okay. You can show and get a point, it's and then you can show in 10 years if you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So we show approximately once a month or so.
Okay.
Just kind of depends on what the schedule's like and all that. But so he's been shown quite a bit. He started when you can start in the 4 to 6.
Yeah.
There's like a little special puppy thing you can do. And he started in that, and then you move on to the upper classes and when they're 6 months old. And right. So he started there.
Junior, senior year. Yeah,
he's an upper class. Yeah. Yeah. And so then he earned his first points at, I believe he was 7 or 8 months.
Okay.
So he started pretty young and he's doing really well. But yeah, him, and I'll also show his sister and his niece I have too. So cool. I've got a couple that family. We're going to show.
So Steve was telling us about some of the different events and things. Does he do a specific event, or does he do different ones?
With him, I just do confirmation right now. Okay. And that's basically like the beauty pageant of the dog world.
Right. That's the one I think that people kind of think of if they've never seen a dog show
before. They usually think of either that or agility, which is basically where they're going over the jumps and things like that. So people kind of think of those two things.
Yeah.
So what you see as the Westminster Dog Show on TV, like the dogs running in the circle, that's what he does. And it's a lot of fun. He really enjoys it.
The really snooty, like, voiceover, like,
yeah.
We've got the Newfoundland.
Yes.
Now to do the confirmation. So tell us a little bit about Not a Bear Newfoundlands and what you guys do and how you kind of got into this breed and what draws you to it.
Well, they're a great breed. Of course, everyone says that about their own breed.
Steve said Dalmatians were the best.
Dalmatians are the best. Yeah. Okay. Well, no, Newfoundlands are definitely the best.
Oh, whoops. Okay. Well, let's not start some beef here. So let's just move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my mom actually fell in love with the breed after watching a movie called Hanging Up, which is an older movie, and it had a Newfoundland in it. Uh-huh. At the time, she didn't know what the breed was, and she tried finding it. It took her a while, and she finally figured out it was a Newfoundland.
Yeah.
So really, it stemmed from my mom loving that breed. And when I was much younger, we had rescues way back. Mm. And then they unfortunately were sick, and they died young, and that was really hard. So we decided that we were going to get, you know, a well-bred, hopefully to
healthier
so that we would, you know, be able to enjoy it longer.
Sure.
So we got our first dog, Shelby, who we still have. She's 8 years old now.
Yeah.
And it kind of started from that. My mom got Shelby, and I fell in love with the breed. So then, I wanted my own. So we got Shadrach, who's our boy, and he's 7 and a half. And he weighs about 150. And he's a big monster boy.
Yeah.
But super sweet. They're very lazy and laid back. And, I mean, this is him. You know, he's just
chilling over there. I can barely see him. but they're just so big. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, when you say the weight, it's not even necessarily shocking to me, because like we have a Pyrenees, and I think her dad, she's a Pyrenees mix, but her dad was like 200 pounds or something.
Wow.
But like he just seemed more leaner, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like something about the Newfoundlands, they just seem like giant meat.
They totally are. They do. They have a lot of coat, and that really makes them look really and much big bigger heads. Than they are, and their head is very round.
Yeah.
Versus the more of a long nose of a Pyrenees. Yeah. They just, because of all that coat and that roundness and wideness, they really look a lot bigger. Like when I'm walking them or something, and someone's like, oh, he's got to be like 200 pounds.
Right.
I'm like, no, not close. Yeah. Not really. He's only like 130. Yeah. So they really look a lot bigger than they are.
Yeah. Is the personality pretty common across the breed? Like he just seems like very friendly and just sort of like a big dope.
Oh yeah, they definitely should be. They're a nanny breed, so think of Peter Pan. The Nana in Peter Pan was a Newfoundland.
Not a Saint Bernard.
No, it actually changed to a Saint Bernard. I honestly don't know why they changed it to a Saint Bernard.
Yeah.
The original was a Newfoundland, and it's a nanny breed. So they love kids.
Yeah.
They're very low energy. They're very friendly. They love to be with their people. Mm-hmm. They're not a breed that just wants a hang out outside by themselves. Like, maybe they do if it's colder or something like that for a little while, but they really want to be with their people.
Yeah.
So they enjoy hanging out with their people for sure.
Yeah. Is the breeding, is it a lot of work? I mean, is it worth it? Like, it seems like there's so many, kind of restrictions and things that they do to, you know, some of it's tradition and some of it's to kind of even the playing field. So when you're comparing dogs, you know, it's more of an apples to apples thing. But, it seems like some people might look at that and be like, oh, that's just too much. Like, I just want to, you know, enjoy dogs or things like that. Like,
yeah, it's breeding. I mean, for sure. Yes, it's a lot of work. Mm. If you're doing it right, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work and a lot of expense that goes into it and a lot of time that goes into it. We don't just say, oh, I have a female and oh, I have a male. Let's breed them together.
Yeah.
As a breeder, we have to have the right female and the right male that complement each other so that when you have that breeding, that the puppies then hopefully will be even better than their parents. And that's essentially, we're breeding, every single breed has a standard and we're breeding to that standard.
Right.
So to hopefully hit every single thing on that standard.
Yeah.
We do health testing, we do temperament testing, we do, you know, shows and all of those things. So that's like an outside view of our dogs. Of course, we all love our dogs. We all think they're perfect.
Right.
But you need that unbiased opinion sometimes, you know? And so you have that. There's so many things that go into it. 8 full weeks of puppies.
Right.
Maybe you have an emergency C-section. Mom gets sick. Puppies get sick. You know, things like that. Those things happen.
Right.
Puppies die. It just happens. And you have to be prepared not only as far as cost-wise, but time-wise and mentally. You have to be able to kind of handle those things.
I didn't know you were going to make this a sad podcast.
I'm sorry.
This is supposed to be one of our happy podcasts.
It is one of the most wonderful things I've ever experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, when the puppies are born and they're, you know, running around and playing with each other or nursing on mom, and you're just sitting there as a breeder and you're sitting there and you have these tiny little lives in your hands. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's nothing, you know, it's very... just nothing anyone can experience, I feel like. You know, it's a very special moment. And then as a breeder, a piece of us is in every single one of those puppies that then, you know, go on to your families. And we can hopefully make someone else really happy and excited about, you know, getting what their dream is, have one of these breeds.
Yeah. And that's really rewarding. Like you said, I mean, those puppies are, when you're a breeder, like they're here because of you. Like you made that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you're responsible for that.
For
so that's really cool. What do they think of the dog show? Like, can you kind of get a sense? Like, are they like,
oh my goodness,
do they love it?
Do they love
the attention? Are they like, this
it.
Is like yeah. annoying? Like,
no,
why are you touching me there? Like,
I am sure there are some. Pretty much all of mine love it. Like, I have one of my girls, Peek, who is a grand champion. She absolutely is obsessed with shows. If I say the word show in the house, she starts running around the house crying and wagging her tail. She knows what we're doing. If I grab
so that
a
sounds
show
like
lead,
my daughter, if she were a dog, like she would be like that.
Like,
she
were
loves
to
do the ballet thing and be on stage. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
If you were to grab her like leotard or tutu or something, she'd be like screaming, run. That's my girl. That's my girl, Peek. She loves it so much.
Uh-huh.
She don't, I can't even put on, like, we wear a very like professional attire.
Oh, okay. You can't throw that on.
No, if I put on like a dress with a blazer or something, she has a meltdown.
Yeah.
She's so excited.
Oh, wow.
So, they definitely know. And you can tell the dogs that enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
My boy Shadrach, he never really loved showing. Not like that. He did it. He enjoyed it somewhat. He enjoyed going out. He enjoyed spending time with me. Things like that. But you could tell he wasn't in love with it like she was. He really enjoyed more of the therapy that we do. And so that was his thing.
Yeah.
So he did show. He did finish his championship. But I didn't force, you know, him to continue showing. With Peek, it's like she has to go to the show. She loves it so much.
Yeah, that's cool. What's the therapy thing that you guys
do? Well, we do a lot of therapy with cancer treatment centers. Mm. We do with little kids and illnesses that sometimes are terminal or just lifetime illnesses. We do assisted living homes, all kinds of different things. We also do education on service dogs and therapy dogs with schools or Boy Scouts, even businesses and things like that.
Yeah.
And so that's an amazing thing we love to do. That's kind of one of our main things. Showing is just kind of what we do every once in a while, but we really started with therapy and service dogs, and that was kind of where we started, and then we also showed as well.
Sure, tell me a little bit more about that and what that's like when you go to visit these kids or these
seniors. It can be really hard.
I bet.
It can be really hard. You know, we go to a treatment center, a cancer chemo treatment center, and not everyone necessarily has cancer there. Some of them have blood disorders and things like that, but there's a big treatment room, and when you go into that treatment room, it's a very interesting experience. You go in, it's very quiet. Sure. No one is talking. It's a little sad. Yeah. You know, it's heavy. It's a heavy
room. Yeah, I'm sure.
And very you walk subdued. In with these big dogs and faces light up and people smile and they forget for, you know, an hour that we're there, you know, and everyone starts talking and laughing and sharing about dogs that they have at home or dogs that they used to have or things like that. And then you leave the room and everyone is, the room is different. It's much lighter. People are talking with each other and, you know, sharing pictures on their phone, you know, things like that. And it's a really special moment. And same thing, you know, with the assisted living, you know, some of these elderly, they don't have family left. Maybe their family lives far away, whatever it may be, they don't get a visitor. And so the dog comes in. And they're so excited. We've had some that are like, oh, can they come up in bed with me? And and the dog will put their paws up and they'll be able to pet them. And
especially this one.
Yeah, they can get right up in bed.
They climb right up there.
Oh, yeah. They love it. They love it so much. And they talk to them and they pet them and they just think it's the greatest thing.
Yeah.
And it's unconditional love. There's no judgment there. There's nothing there. The dog just loves them and wants the attention and they love to give it. Yeah. And it's an amazing thing. It's really special. It's a really, really special thing in my heart that we're able to do. And the dogs, they love it, of course. You know, I have Shadrach is one of our therapy dogs. Mrs. Jans is one of our therapy dogs. And they know the places that we go to. He knows right where the elevator is. He knows right all the rooms that he can go in, you know,
all
things
the beds
like that.
He can climb on.
Yeah, you know, he knows. And he just, you know, goes place to place, you know, and it's a really awesome thing.
Yeah.
And
that is so cool. Like, thank you for doing that.
Of course, we love it.
I mean, that's making me want to get a Newfoundland just to be able to do some more of that work. Are there quite a bit of kennels that do stuff like that as well, you know, outside of the breeding thing? Or is it more unusual?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know a whole bunch of
how they operate.
Right. I know that therapy dogs in different facilities are definitely becoming more popular. And I think that more and more people are doing it. I do know a lot of breeders that do it, but I couldn't say, you know, is it more common or not, but it's definitely becoming more common and more facilities and more places are looking for those animals and looking for those things. It's not like personal people could take their dogs and do it. You know, there's tons of programs that people can take their dog and certify as a therapy dog and just, you know, volunteer whenever.
Yeah.
So that's great too.
Cool. Well, definitely want to shout out you guys on Instagram. It's Not a Bear Newfoundlands, and that's spelled NotaBear Newfoundlands. I'm not going to spell that. I'm just kidding. A must-follow Instagram account for sure. You can also find them on Facebook.
So much fun. And that's kind of where we started. I mean, we started with, because we are in the facilities, some facilities would hear about us or through however way. And they would ask, you know, can you come visit us? And we can't go to every single one, unfortunately. Sure. Maybe they're in a different state or whatever. So then we started taking pictures and sending them. So that's been really fun that people, you know, from all over the place know our dogs and see our dogs and, you know, and it brings a smile to everyone. And it's so special.
Yeah.
That's so special to be able to share that. So even though we're not able to visit everyone and share them personally, but through a way we can. We do lots of videos and stuff. And
yeah.
So people love to see their personalities through that, so that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the internet is like 98% just pictures of cats and dogs.
Yes.
Are doing
that's the way
right.
It should be.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Bethany. And Kid, did you have anything to add? What we got? Bethany. Oh, now all of a sudden he's shy.
Are you shy now? Your microphone shy?
Yeah. He's not interested. Oh, well, maybe next time. But thank you so much for taking
thank
the time
Thank you so much for having us.
And good luck at the show this weekend.
Thank you.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. He was a bad man from Texas by the name of John Overstreet, and he was grazing his sheep where they didn't belong. Overstreet had the misfortune of trespassing onto a meadow owned by three of the Brown brothers, who had originally settled in New Era between Canby and Oregon City before looking east. Two would eventually return. Of the three, the eldest was William Walter, better known as W.W. or simply Bill, and especially Old Bill in his later years. Tall and gaunt as a wind-whipped juniper tree and tougher than suntanned rawhide, he was destined to become a legend, one of the most colorful figures in eastern Oregon, and at one time one of the richest men in the Pacific Northwest. Newspapers would dub him the Horse King of the West and the Millionaire Horse King. But on this day, he was just William Brown, a 30-year-old former schoolteacher. He was the third of seven children, born in Wisconsin to a family of English immigrants. 4 years earlier, he had bought an equal share in a flock of 1,000 sheep with his two younger brothers, Robert and George Henry, more on him later. The brothers had driven their flock from the Willamette Valley to Harney County. They laid claim to a homestead on the east slope of Wagentire Mountain, where they built a small rustic cabin with a dirt floor and no windows whatsoever. Sheep was a growth industry in the 1880s, and the brothers rapidly expanded their herd and their territory by buying up neighboring properties with water sources. By the mid-1880s, they were producing 32,000 pounds of wool per year. It was in 1886 that John Overstreet stumbled across their path. Bill Brown warned Overstreet that he was trespassing, something he probably already knew. He was their neighbor's hired hand, after all. Overstreet refused to move along, and the two men grabbed their guns. A shootout ensued. Overstreet lost. Bill reported the incident to the Justice of the Peace in nearby Silver Lake. The grand jury refused to return an indictment, citing self-defense. This was untamed country. Ranchers faced threats not only from their neighbors, but also Mother Nature. Bears and mountain lions were an ever-present danger. Even the weather could be deadly. In 1889, the brothers lost 95% of their herds, which by then had grown to more than 10,000, during an especially long and brutal winter. Only 500 survived, and Robert and George moved back to the Canby area in search of greener pastures, literally. Actually, George seemed to have soured on the sheep business altogether. He became a producer of hardier stock, the potato. He quickly gained the reputation of a pioneer in the cultivation of Oregon spuds, and one of the first to export the commodity to other states via carload. Whether George was gifted with an especially verdant green thumb, or there was simply something special in the soils of his New Era farm, we'll never know, but he regularly reported harvesting more than 200 bushels per acre throughout the early 1900s, double the average yield in those days. Like his brother, who hadn't yet earned his royal nickname, George was soon known as the Potato King of Clackamas County, and potatoes became one of Canby's main agricultural exports. The Canby ferry trundling slowly across the Willamette, laden with tons of stuffed potato sacks, was a common sight in those days, and George was a very wealthy man. His reported income of $40,000 in 1917 would be the equivalent of somewhere north of $800,000 today. He had five children and became president of the Bank of Commerce in his later years, serving as chairman of his board of directors until his death in 1930. Meanwhile, back in eastern Oregon, Bill Brown was not slouching either. From the 500-some sheep that had survived the winter of 1889, he gradually rebuilt his sheep operation to over 22,000 animals. In 1892, Bill began buying small horse herds from his neighbors, usually for around $3 to $10 a head. Though his sheep operation was larger, and the sheep were always his favorite, it was his vast herds of wild horses that he would come to be known for. As with most things, he was eccentric about his horses. He bought good stallions and raised American horses, he would later tell the Statesman Journal. He marked them with a horseshoe bar symbol, and he guarded his brand with a ruthlessness that would have impressed Steve Jobs. He refused to sell them to his neighbors or anyone who planned to use them in Oregon, and so any horse in the state bearing the horseshoe bar was presumed to be the property of Bill Brown. Every horse he sold had its horseshoe bar mark carefully X'd out with hot irons. It became one of the most famous and instantly recognizable symbols in eastern Oregon. The Bend Bulletin would later note, "The coat of arms of Bill's Rangeland Empire." Chasing and gathering wild horses was tricky business. It required men who knew horses intuitively, better even than the horses knew themselves. Bill's buckaroos also had to know the land and had to ride horses that were as fearless and fleet-footed as the stallions they aimed to capture. They had to trust their horses to smell hidden badger holes, to avoid sagebrush and juniper trees, to know which direction to take the riders, and to have enough endurance to outlast the stallion and his harem. The danger added to the excitement of the chase. Horse raising was a lucrative enterprise for those who could capitalize on the military needs of the early 20th century, and Bill Brown was one of the first documented defense contractors in U.S. history. He made a killing, though not literally, in the Spanish-American War of 1898. He sold thousands of horses to the U.S. Army at shrewdly high markups, $80 to $100 each. Even after the war ended, he continued to sell thousands of horses to the Army each year. Foreign powers like the United Kingdom also sent agents to Central Oregon to purchase stock from Old Bill. Sometimes he would sell horses to an intermediary who would break them and then flip them for sale to the military. In Legends of Oregon's High Desert, a book about Bill by Edward Gray, one of his former buckaroos, Sumner Houston, recalled one time he sold a pile of horses to a Montana outfit at an auction in Crane. He brought back a check for $100,000, well over $1 million today. War of a much less profitable sort was about to break out across the open range, and Old Bill would get an unpleasant taste of it. But that story we'll have to wait till next time on Can Be Then.
For someone who enjoys a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region, and it can be a little overwhelming, but it's also exciting, if you have the right guide.
That's why we love visiting the FOB Taproom in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beer, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles. And their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Steve Nielsen, Bethany Davis, and of course, The Kid. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In a legislative session that featured debates over tax increases, gun restrictions, juvenile justice reform, educational funding, cap and trade, and even literally genocide and the Holocaust, No proposal generated more controversy, more public comment, and more general angst than House Bill 3063, which would have removed the option for public school children to be exempted from vaccines for anything other than approved medical reasons. The bill will not be moving forward this session, but the debate doesn't seem to be going anywhere. In our next episode, we sit down with Dr. Max Cohen, a naturopathic physician who believes vaccines are safe and effective. He agreed to answer questions from us and our listeners about vaccines and how we should approach public health in our state.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit canbenowpod.com/plus.
Oh, it's fine. It's your friend. Stop.
Hey, kid, you just wanted to get on the podcast,
yeah.
Didn't you?
Are you telling us all about it? You're telling us all about it? Good boy.
You good boy?
I wanted to say hi to that dog, and it did not seem sure.
Yeah.
You're a good boy. I know. And he's young, too, so yeah. That doesn't help.
Yeah.